Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
My dog loves me, and the Steelers are a very confusing team to try and address heading into Thursday night football. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, we are staring down, I think, a very interesting situation heading into Thursday night football tonight. The Minnesota Vikings and the Pittsburgh Steelers are getting ready to square off. And what a strange day to wake up, look at this matchup, and say, heading into a football game played by human beings in the National Football League, I have more faith in Kirk Cousins than I do Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, but you can't say you have more faith in the Minnesota Vikings, who just lost to a winless Detroit Lions team, versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, who just upset their rival in the Baltimore Ravens. And I think that's what it ultimately comes down to, right? Because we know on a short week, Big Ben is going to struggle to get himself back to being 100%, just given the age and where he's at and the elbow injury that he had a couple of years ago. Like, we know from an arm talent standpoint, this is not the same guy that was leading them to Super Bowls. And so, yeah, I get why you would feel like you're more confident in Kirk Cousins, but what's that worth when we start looking at both rosters and we start looking at where both teams are at?
Yeah, well, where both teams are at is interesting to consider in this one, Chris. Like, looking at the game tonight here, from a playoff standpoint, both teams right now on the fringe, you know, on the outside looking in. The Steelers are in eighth place in the AFC at this point, the Vikings in ninth place in the NFC. But does this feel more dire on one side than the other for you when it comes to that playoff life?
Oh, yeah. It's the Minnesota Vikings, right? Because if they don't get in the playoffs, we know that there are going to be changes in that organization, and they're probably going to start with my former defensive coordinator, now head coach Mike Zimmer. Like, this is all on him. If he doesn't deliver, I have a hard time imagining Ziggy Wilf is going to bring him back as the head coach in 2022. So it feels like there's more pressure. And then when you look at the remaining schedule for the Minnesota Vikings, like, even though they got two games against the Chicago Bears, they got dates with the LA Rams and the Green Bay Packers, and those are both games that I can't envision this squad being able to win. So when you look at the other teams that are in wild card contention in the NFC, like the Philadelphia Eagles, the Washington football team, the San Francisco 49ers, I don't know, man. It just feels like Minnesota has a tougher road to toe. When I look at the schedule remaining for the Pittsburgh Steelers, even though there's tougher competition for those wild card spots in the AFC, the teams that the Steelers are competing against are better. Like, there's only one game of the remaining five that I would say the Steelers probably can't win, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. All the other ones are a flip of a coin. So, yeah, I think there has to be more desperation. There has to be more urgency with the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I would agree on that, Chris. And what you mentioned to me is the big selling point. It's existential with Minnesota, right, in its current form, because you've got the potential for Mike Zimmer to potentially be on the way out. You've got the potential for Rick Spielman at GM to potentially be someone that they move on with after this season. And the quarterback. Like, in the middle of all of this, Chris, I'm fascinated the ripple effects that are going to start to be centered around Kirk Cousins, because we're coming up, the last year of his contract will be next season. He would be due, if he is on this roster for the Minnesota Vikings, about $45 million.
Ooh, yes. Say that again.
$45 million for Kirk Cousins. Like, Chris, regardless of what we think about this man as a quarterback, and he has been in the very, very good category statistically more often than not, I have to salute this absolute hero at the bank, because there may not be a better businessman in the history of the NFL at quarterback relative to his talent getting more out of it at the bank than Kirk Cousins has.
No doubt about it. It feels like, from a contractual standpoint, Kirk Cousins is executing the Darrell Revis model.
Yes.
Like, being willing to go year to year and leverage his skill set against what the organization is going to pay, and then what it would cost for the organization to replace his talent level. And so, even though we both can admit that Kirk Cousins probably isn't a top, you know, top 8 to 10 quarterback, Kirk Cousins is always going to be one of those highest paid quarterbacks, because he's willing to push it all the way up to the limit, and he's willing to go into a season in a contract year. And so it puts the Minnesota Vikings in an interesting position, especially if the organization is thinking about transitioning away from their head coach and or their general manager, right? What do you do with Kirk Cousins? And we've had this conversation before about other players, Gojo, But when you're paying Kirk Cousins that kind of salary, I believe he's a quarterback that's just good enough to get you fired. And if you think back to a couple of years ago when they decided that they were going to make the move to sign Kirk Cousins and guarantee him all that money in their initial deal, bringing him over from the Washington football team, like, this was supposed to be the missing piece that got the Minnesota Vikings over the hump. Like, the defense was already in place. They had some semblance of a running game. They just needed a quarterback to be the trigger man and upgrade from what they already had in order to push them over the top. And they didn't get that from Kirk Cousins. And then, as a result of signing him to a contract extension, they lost pieces on the defensive side of the ball. And that forced that team's identity to have to be on the offensive side of the ball. And we realized Cousins isn't capable of elevating the talent level around him to the point that puts you in championship contention. So that's why we haven't seen the Minnesota Vikings truly contend in the NFC North, and we're not talking about them being able to make a deep run in the playoffs. So again, Kirk Cousins proving my point that he's a coach that's just good enough to get you fired, and it's probably why the Washington football team didn't acquiesce to his contract demands and why they chose to franchise him multiple times before they let him walk out the door.
And now it's going to be amazing, Chris, because you pointed to what you do with him going into next season. And I think given all of the change, if this ends up being a lost season for Minnesota and they decide to make a lot of these changes here, I think you've got to do everything in your power to deal with this guy. Because the bottom line is, someone is going to pay him to play football next year. Someone, as we get ready to shuffle a lot of quarterbacks next year, we've talked so much about that top end where, hey, Russell Wilson could be out of Seattle. Hey, Aaron Rodgers could leave the Green Bay Packers. On and on down this list, Chris, this could be a quarterback that someone decides to settle for. And if you are the Minnesota Vikings, you and I talked about this before the show, if you manage to trade him, that's what, a $10 million dead cap hit? Which, listen, not ideal for a team that I think would be projected to be a bit over the cap with Kirk Cousins and have to restructure things now. But I think if you're going to start over, hitting a hard reset and at least giving yourself the hope somewhere, because Kirk Cousins is a ceiling quarterback, and whoever takes him on next becomes a complicated question. Because, Chris, if we're talking about the Denver Broncos, if we're talking about the New Orleans Saints, you would be trying to bring Kirk Cousins over to do exactly what he could not do in Minnesota and expecting it to somehow go differently.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, though, Gojo. Like, I think if you're bringing Kirk Cousins over, if you're one of those franchises, I think you have to go into that situation with clear eyes. Like, you know what it was, the talent level on that Minnesota Vikings team when they acquired Kirk Cousins a few years ago. Like, that was a team that was ready to win. And Kirk Cousins fell short of that mark. So I don't know that you're bringing him over to be the difference in your team being able to compete and do high-level winning. I think Kirk Cousins is a very good stopgap quarterback to whoever's going to be your long-term answer at the position. And if you're asking him to do anything more than that, then congratulations, you played yourself. Like, I just feel like that's what we've got to be talking about when it comes to Kirk Cousins. That's what it is. Like, you're talking about a team back in 2017 that was able to get to the conference title game with Case Keenum as their quarterback and then never being able to get back to that point again after they broke the bank for Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, you can try to evaluate it all you want. I mean, we've seen the control and we've seen the experiment. And so far, I would have to say that what they invested in Kirk Cousins, I could argue that they didn't necessarily get the return on that investment. And now that's left Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman in a very tough spot to justify their job security, seeing as how the team has underachieved based on the expectations we had coming into this season.
These are all of the things that are baked into tonight's matchup for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Minnesota Vikings here. Some of the big questions that this team in purple could end up asking if things continue to go south, and that starts tonight. We want to hear from you on that front. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's heating up, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Coming up in about 30 seconds, though, we will check in on Pittsburgh. See how the other side of this is, because if we want to talk about quarterbacks with uncertain futures, look no further than Ben Roethlisberger as we approach the end of this season. We'll get to that after this word from AT&T. Now, If there are friends and family members that you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So, AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have been the subject of this kind of conversation all season long. Heading into last weekend, there were the reports about Ben Roethlisberger privately telling folks that this was his last season in Pittsburgh. For more on all of these happenings, we head out to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to Brooke Pryor, our ESPN Steelers reporter. She joins us on that Goodyear Hotline with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. And Brooke, we heard those comments going into last weekend. What's the tenor been like around the building, around this team, since we heard that last time?
You know, it's been business as usual, and I think that that speaks to kind of the expected nature of Ben's kind of decision or his timing now telling people around the organization, former teammates, that this is going to be his last year, because I don't think that there was necessarily a lot of hope that he would be playing past this year. And yes, the way they structured the deal, it technically voids after this season. If he had some crazy bounce back good season showing that the elbow's fine, the mobility's not an issue, they could have found a way to bring him back, right? But I think that everything was structured with the understanding that this was probably going to be his last year. And so telling people now is more like a formality. But, I mean, I ask guys from Deontay Johnson to Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, Cam Hayward, you know, hey, is this a distraction? How do you manage it? And they all said, no, it's not a distraction. I mean, I think Mike Tomlin, after the game, he was asked by Sal Pal about it, and he kind of laughed, and he said, I think it's funny that this is even a story, again, speaking to the kind of accepted nature of this news, that it's news, but it's kind of, they've known that it was coming.
Brooke, our very own Dan Graziano released an article on ESPN.com this week talking about the job security of general managers and head coaches around the National Football League, and he floated the possibility of the Steelers moving on from general manager Kevin Colbert, who's been a part of the organization since 2000. So I wanted to ask you, how important are the final five games to Kevin Colbert's job security in Pittsburgh?
I mean, they're incredibly important, but at the same time, Colbert's been working on a year-to-year deal recently, and it kind of has felt like every year it's been a little bit of holding breath to see if not only does the organization want him back, but does he want to come back? Because like you said, he's been a part of this organization for so long that I don't think, you know, a bad performance the last five games would be the final straw for the Steelers to say, you know what, Kevin, we don't want you back. I think it's more just about, it might be time to have some fresh ideas in there, just a changing of the guard, especially if Ben retires or is done in Pittsburgh. I don't think Mike Tomlin is moving on by any means, but it could be kind of a chance to wipe the slate somewhat clean and move on to the next era and Steelers football. And I don't think that the next five games are an indictment of Kevin Colbert. I mean, you look at the last draft class, they're still drafting incredibly well. They've had some misses in the past, but this year their rookies are contributing, at least offensively, pretty immediately with Najee Harris and Dan Moore Jr. and Pat Freiermuth. I mean, I don't think that his job is necessarily tied to the next five games for the Steelers.
Canny and Golic Jr. talking to ESPN Steelers reporter Brooke Pryor on the Goodyear Hotline. And Brooke, a draft pick that's worked out very well for the Steelers is TJ Watt. He now leads the NFL in sacks here. Is there finally the sense that this feels like his defensive player of the year moment for this team down the stretch?
I mean, gosh, you have to hope so. He's come so close the last couple of years and keeps missing out. You know, Aaron Donald just getting the better of him. I think that he has some competition from a guy like Myles Garrett. The numbers, you know, raw sacks say that TJ Watt is in the lead, but then there's some other metrics that show that maybe Myles Garrett is the more effective player. And that's been a very big topic of conversation on Twitter between Browns Twitter and Steelers Twitter. But I do think TJ Watt is, you know, playing like a defensive player of the year. And there's, you know, Ben even said this week when I asked him about Defensive Player of the Year MVP, he said this guy deserves MVP votes. I don't know that he will get them just because of the nature of the league, but he's certainly playing out of his mind. And when you look, too, he leads the league with 16 sacks, and he missed two games. this guy's a game changer, and he's one of the reasons that the Steelers are still in contention for the playoffs when it seems like they were dead and buried just, you know, a couple weeks ago, and now they kind of are sticking a hand up from the grave, like, don't forget about us, we're still here, and he's a big reason for that.
Brooke, the Steelers are 6-1-1 in games decided by one possession. What has been the key, or what are the guys in the locker room saying is the key for them being able to have that kind of success in all these close ball games?
You know, I think a lot of it is the veteran presence on this team. And yes, Ben Roethlisberger has not played like the gunslinger, like the Ben that we saw for the majority of 18 years. But he still has this poise and this ability to lead a game-winning comeback drive. I mean, even in the Chargers game, where it looked like they should have been completely out of it in the third quarter, or at least at halftime, he leads them in the fourth quarter, and they nearly come all the way back. And I just think that that's something that you can't replace, or that isn't, you know, easily reproduced. And his leadership and ability to kind of be poised, run a no-huddle offense, that has really made a huge difference. And then defensively, yes, they've had, this has not been the steel curtain defense that we know, but at the same time, T.J. Watt, they still have him. He has been incredible. I mean, he's the reason that Lamar Jackson doesn't end up completing that pass to Mark Andrews, because he affected it that much. So I think that while there are some major glaring holes on this team and some big problem areas, they do have poise when it gets really tough in the late games to hold on for that win, whether it's coming back or, I mean, like against the Bears, it looked like Justin Fields and that group were going to find a way to come back, and they still hung on. So a little bit of luck, a lot of veteran presence.
Veteran presence has certainly helped across the board for this team, Brooke, but I want to look at yet another hit in the wide receiver room for this Pittsburgh Steelers front office here. Diontae Johnson feels like he is always open at this point, making plays. How did we get to this point now where he is the number one option for this offense?
You know, it is kind of funny to see his development, especially because, I don't know, when I think of wide receivers, I think of really flashy guys. I think of guys like Juju on the same team. But Diontae is very much under the radar. He's a really quiet guy. I mean, he's the one that's tweeting a version of Rise and Grind every day, but he's not, like, beating his chest and yelling and stuff in practice or in games. But he's kind of a silent killer, right? Like, he is such a hard worker, and that's something that he's really developed between his second and third year in the league. He bought a tennis ball machine in the offseason, because last year he led the league in drops, and I think was either two or four more than the next closest guy. But he bought a tennis ball machine. He said that that was kind of helping him to catch something with a smaller surface area, so that when it came to a football, he could it would just come easier and more natural. He does that. He is the first guy out on the field before practice, before a game. It doesn't matter if he's playing or not. Even when he was hurt, he was doing that. And he does things like he takes a printout of the scouting report of the secondary that he's going to face, and he puts it up in his locker just so that every time he's in the locker room, he's looking at it. He's studying it. I mean, he knew all of Marlon Humphrey's tendencies. He knows Pat Pete's tendencies. Like, he is just, I think, really dedicated himself to the work that it takes to be an elite receiver. And he's always had the talent and the speed and the separation, but he needed to take his mental game up a notch, and he's done that. And, I mean, he has a great connection with Ben. I was talking with Juju the other day, and I said, look, does it feel like, you know, he can't play. I said, does it feel like you're watching – like your ex with a new guy? Like, does Ben have a new girlfriend? Is this tough for you? And he was like, no, it's fine. Like, Diontae's his new girlfriend. I'm his old girlfriend. What we had was great. If I come back, we can still have it. But I love seeing the connection that they have. And I think it's been really fun to watch. And it's been a bright spot in a Steelers defense that's been really, or Steelers offense that's been really inconsistent.
There's no doubt. Been exciting to watch that development. Going to be exciting to watch this matchup tonight. Brooke, we appreciate you giving us some time. As always, we'll talk to you soon, friend.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
ESPN Steelers reporter Brooke Pryor with us on the Goodyear Hotline. So we've got Thursday Night Football. We will get into plenty more of that coming up. But coming up next, as we hear all the rumors swirling about Damian Lillard in the NBA, how much does his current team in the Portland Trail Blazers owe him in this process as we near the end of his career? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And every once in a while, I have to appreciate the artistry of the algorithm, Chris.
Mm.
Because I log on to ESPN.com, and I'm looking at the basketball homepage. And I look down, and I see Damian Lillard's face. He's doing an interview with our very own Mark J. Spears, ESPN NBA writer and reporter. And the tagline for the video is, Dame, I want to be a part of the solution in Portland. And we actually have that sound. This is Damian Lillard talking in the shoot-around on Wednesday about that situation.
Nothing at all has changed as far as what I said in that clip. You know, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And, you know, we haven't had the start that we wanted, you know, but we're a work in progress, you know. And myself, the rest of my teammates, and Chauncey, you know, it's a partnership with them. And everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to, you know, get this thing turned around. And I'm just trying to be a part of the solution to that, you know, and get us going in the right direction, and that takes time. You know, we knew it was going to be some growing pains with a new coaching staff, first-time head coach, and so many new guys, and we're just working our way through it.
And, Chris, right below that clip on ESPN.com is the article from our NBA insiders, 5 big Damian Lillard trades that we want to see. Like, I feel like we've always been doing this with him, but we have reached a different level of smoke, leading me to believe there's got to be some fire here.
Yeah, and it feels like there's a little bit of petty baked into that as well. Is it just me, or are you reading that same thing?
Oh,
just
no, because there's definitely some.
Yeah, no doubt, because Damian Lillard has been saying that to anybody that wants to listen. And I get that he's loyal to the soil, like Portland is his team. He's been there for 10 years, and he doesn't want to go anywhere. But at this point, you have to have a little bit of awareness and recognize where your franchise is and then recognize where you are in your career. Like, you are still in your prime. And you would think that you would want to capitalize on that by being able to do some high-level winning. And it's become clear over the past couple of years that's just not going to happen in Portland. Like, they moved on from Terry Stotts last year. They're moving on from Neil O'Shea, their general manager, this year. This is an organization that's in flux. It doesn't make sense for them to retain Damian Lillard and or to acquiesce to his demands of a contract extension right now based on where the rest of the roster is. Like Portland needs to push the hard reset button and go ahead and see what other assets you can acquire for Damian Lillard, because it's clear that this team is not going to do any high-level winning for a long time from now.
Now, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Chris, let's flip that the other way, though, because you mentioned Damian Lillard, always been loyal to the soil. He has stayed there much longer than any of us thought he should, based on what looked like the ceiling. And outside of the Western Conference Finals appearance from 2 years ago, we have not seen them really accomplish at that level. Damian has invested in that team. Do the Trailblazers owe him anything at this point? Like, if he wants to finish out his career in Portland, does it need to be one of those lifetime achievement situations where he is going to go down as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, to ever suit up with that team? Do you owe something to that guy if his desire is to stay?
No, I don't think you can afford to do that if you're Portland. Like, I get where you're coming from, and because Lillard has expressed a willingness to stay put, like, you would think that the organization will reciprocate and return that in kind. But, I mean, it's a cold game out here, man. No blanket. Like, the reality is that the team has to do what's in their best interest. And right now, what's in the Trailblazers' best interest is to use Dame as an asset that can bring along pieces or future assets that they can then reshape this roster with. Because outside of him and CJ McCollum, they don't really have a whole lot of things that they can utilize in order to bring back draft picks or to bring back young players at controllable salaries in order to give Chauncey Billups something to work with in the future. Like, that to me has to be the priority for the Trailblazers. Because, listen, man, in the next 2 or 3 years, the Portland Trailblazers in the Western Conference are going to be irrelevant. Like, they're always going to be a team that's flirting with play-in tournament contention, but they're going to be a team that's one and done when it comes to playoff series. So, I mean, if you're in Portland's front office or your ownership out there, you've got to look at this thing with clear eyes. And Damian Lillard is no longer a part of your long-term future. So you've got to make the decision, albeit a tough one, because you know what he's meant to your team and you know what he's meant to your community over the course of the last decade. You've got to make a tough decision to move off from him. And I don't know how much say Damian Lillard should have in the organization making said decision.
No, I'd agree with you on that front, Chris, because you're right. Part of why I wanted to bring that up is to remind everyone that is how the game goes. And so when we see players leverage this the other way here and people cry foul, I always like to point out that when you get to the end of someone's career, that loyalty is only going to extend as far as you are useful to the team. And everyone involved understands that. The folks on the side that are playing in this understand that. But then there's this expectation of loyalty that cuts both ways on this. So I'm with you 100% on that. The other difficult part for Portland goes, and this is where when we get into some of those proposed trades, and ESPN front office, NBA front office insider Bobby Marks is going to join our show at 5:30 to discuss the complexities of moving on from him. Because Chris, in my mind, the one thing that's got to happen if you are Portland, while they're, by the way, searching for a GM, right? Like they're on an interim GM right now as we're talking about these decisions getting made here. You've got to get something in the way of a marquee player back because you are staring at what every small market team stares at in these spots. It's what Oklahoma City dealt with for years. It's what Milwaukee was going to be staring at had Giannis not signed that max extension is complete irrelevance. If you don't have that star player to be the draw at some point, what do you have to sell to fans in that market? What do you have to sell to TV partners who want an incentive to put you on games?
No, you're right about that. And so you start having to look at the places that have marquee young players that are ready to get out of their current situation. At the top of that list has to be the Philadelphia 76ers with Ben Simmons. Now, I know on the .com article from our ESPN NBA insiders, they didn't include Ben Simmons in that trade. I think it was Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, and Tyrese Maxey.
Yep, and but a 2022 first-round pick.
Yeah, but to me, in order for Portland to be on board with that, it would have to include Ben Simmons, who's a guy that's in his mid-20s and is already an all-star. Like, to me, if you add Ben Simmons to that, take Tobias Harris out of the deal, and even take the draft pick out, I mean, you're talking about completely reshaping your backcourt and having something for Chauncey Billups to work with. So I think that makes sense for both sides, and that automatically catapults the Philadelphia 76ers into a top three seed in the Eastern Conference and a team that's capable of coming out of the East and representing them in the NBA Finals. So to me, that deal makes a lot of sense. I'm also intrigued at what potential package, not saying that they would be interested, but what potential package the Golden State Warriors could put together.
Huh.
Because I think that's really interesting, and that's not listed on the .com proposals, but, you know, if you threw in a James Wiseman, if you threw in a Kuminga, if you threw in a Moses Moody, and to make the money match an Andrew Wiggins, and then if you got to sweeten it with draft picks, what would that look like if you were able to add Damian Lillard to a backcourt that includes Seth Curry, and then you have Klay Thompson coming back healthy and Draymond Green and others? Like, to me, that would be, I mean, you're already talking about the best team in the NBA, but that would just take what we've seen from the Golden State Warriors to a whole nother level.
Man, if you want to take the rise that we've already seen back here, and it would alleviate a lot of the pressure because we've seen Klay Thompson, God love him, seems like he has been frustrated, chomping at the bit to get back here, and we know that's going to be the case, but man, it would ease the burden certainly of having to rush him back in any sort of real time. And also give them one of the, I mean, the most potent backcourt in the NBA shooting-wise. It's probably not close now, and it wouldn't be close then. I think that Philadelphia fit you mentioned works in a lot of ways, just the kind of guy Damian Lillard is, what that city demands, and working opposite Joel Embiid. But we can get into all of those when Bobby Marks joins later on here, because now that Golden State one, that is going to be hard to ignore. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. But coming up next, speaking of hard to ignore, did one team in the Eastern Conference just send the message that last night that they are ready to be sitting at the table with the power players on that side of the league? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty coming up in about 10 minutes. We will address the rumors that will not go away, the reports that will not go away concerning one Russell Westbrook and a football team in New York that I know eventually is going to be the reason Chris Canty breaks some sort of radio equipment in the near vicinity of him.
Well, listen, I know he's Mr. Triple-Double, but I didn't know Russell Westbrook was getting into football business.
You know what? I am good for one of those a quarter, so I'm glad we got that in right now. We are on the technically, we're out of the book now, so even better. But
anything goes. Anything goes.
Snuck that one into the wire. What's up, holiday book? Anyway, Russell Wilson we will get to in a little bit here, but probably had basketball on the brain, Chris.
Well, listen, Knicks fans could probably go with Russell Westbrook, too. So if you're talking about Russell Westbrook to New York, I think the Giants fans and the Knicks fans would be on board with that.
That is fair. We got through a whole Damian Lillard segment without mentioning the New York Knicks. They've got to be seething right now as we go on with this, but I don't want to talk about New York basketball right this second because I feel like Chris, is it time that we pay a little bit of respect to the Heat culture? Last night, a 113-104 win over the Milwaukee Bucks. No Jimmy Butler, no Bam Adebayo for this team. And they find a way in all of this. Are they clearly in that upper crust now? Is it them near the top of the Eastern Conference with Brooklyn and Milwaukee?
Yeah, I got to put them in that top tier, man. I think if you're looking at the three teams that you trust the most in the East, right now, Miami is included with Brooklyn and with Milwaukee, man. What they did last night, no Bam, no Jimmy Butler. Kyle Lowry with a turn-back-the-clock type of performance. I mean, what he did in that third quarter, I mean, dropping 16 of the Heat's 39 points coming out of halftime, like that just shows me like he's the missing piece that they've wanted down in Miami since they've been able to establish this program the last couple of years with Jimmy and with Bam. Like, that's the guy that they needed, the floor general. And then they seem like they've got guys, like in Miami, they'll have random guys that as soon as they get off the bus at the arena, they're within three-point range. I mean, whether it's Caleb Martin or whether it's Max Strauss, who went off for 16 in the fourth quarter, like, they just got these abundance of guys that can knock it down from anywhere on the court. And so, yeah, I think you have to consider Miami, based on what we've seen so far this season, as one of those teams that's going to hang around. We know that Pat Riley knows how to put together a really good team, and we trust Eric Spoelstra. I think he's one of the top 5 to 7 coaches in the NBA today. So, yeah, I think we got to buy into this Miami Heat team as a true Eastern Conference contender. Now, I don't expect that they're going to make it out of the East, but, I mean, we didn't expect that it was going to be the Milwaukee Bucks and not the Brooklyn Nets that made it out of the Eastern Conference last year. So, anything can happen. Injuries happen. Guys missing portions of the season because of COVID happens. And this Miami Heat team is going to keep stacking wins. So, yeah, I'd put them right there. I know that they're fourth in the East right now, but I believe the Chicago Bulls are false flag. And I don't think the Bulls are a top 3 or 4 seed in the conference, but I do think the Miami Heat are a top 3 seed once it's all said and done, once we get to the Eastern Conference and when we set the playoff field.
Well, and I think they've banked a lot of that goodwill going back to the bubble, right? Like you mentioned, turning this team over to Jimmy Butler was something that, when we looked at the time with the situation, the volatility with him in Philadelphia, that locker room and his meshing there, turning this team over to Jimmy Butler, we all thought this was him going down on his island in Miami to go and play by himself and nothing would come of it, is going to prove to be one of the more potent moves made recent history. Pat Riley deserves a ton of credit for understanding just how perfect the fit was with that guy at the helm leadership-wise, because, Chris, that permeates now. They continue to, I don't want to say recruit, because this is professional sports, but whether it's him or Bam, it is recruiting to an identity that has been consistent and one that's especially able to produce consistent results in the regular season in the NBA based on how they play defense.
No doubt about it. And this is a no-nonsense group. Like, I mean, you already got Jimmy Butler, then you add Bam Adebayo, and then, of course, Kyle Lowry, who's also a no-nonsense personality, a really tough guy, a floor general, somebody that can control the tempo, control the pace of the game. And then I love the move of being able to bring over PJ Tucker and poach last year's championship Milwaukee Bucks, mm-hmm. Add a little bit of that pedigree to the mix as well. Like, think about that. You got a real tough team. You're not talking about fake tough guys. You're talking about real tough guys up and down that lineup, and it feels like they're deep with the rotation that they have to work with when you look at what they did last night, the points that they got off of the bench. So, I mean, this is a real impressive unit, man. This is a real impressive team. I don't know how you can see what the Miami Heat have done so far this season and not buy into them potentially giving some of these championship contenders in the Eastern Conference some problems. Like, they're not going to be an easy out. Like, even if they draw the Milwaukee Bucks or the Brooklyn Nets at some point in the playoffs, whether we're talking about the Eastern Conference semis or the Eastern Conference finals, you know that that's probably going to be a long series. That's going to go 6 or 7 games just because of the championship pedigree that the Miami Heat organization has.
We are brought to you by, presented by Progressive Insurance. I, for one, am excited for the eventuality at some point of PJ Tucker getting chest to chest and almost fighting Kevin Durant again in the playoffs. Oh, I don't know how we're going to happen, but I know we are going to get back to that Texas on Texas violence, and it's going to be exciting. Coming up next, though, Russell Wilson, not Westbrook, if he leaves Seattle. Is New York really a potential landing spot? Apparently, we're going to do this next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.